I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe James McGrath Morris. He's a journalist. He's the author of several books, including the acclaimed biography Pulitzer. And he will be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at the Great Hall in St. John's College about the changing publishing industry. Welcome, James, to the Radio Cafe.
How glad to be back on.
So let's talk about the publishing industry. You are making the case that the changes that we're seeing now, from paper books to electronic books and digital media and so on, are as major as the invention of the printing press. How do you see that?
Well, to be more precise, the invention of the movable type.
Right.
When Gutenberg changed publishing by permitting the mass production of books, it equaled the change that occurred in the 19th century when we were able to produce books and newspapers on a scale that allowed millions of people to read things. It changed reading fundamentally. It meant it was no longer the preserve of the wealthy elite few who could have access to a book, but rather it could be books could be read by almost anyone, and thus they began to become interpreters of their own truth, challenged authority, and as you know, the Renaissance and all that changed the world. That's a very 30-second clippy version of history. But I think what people are misunderstanding is that e-books are not just books in pixelated form. They're going to fundamentally change the process of publishing books, the process of distributing books, and even more importantly, the actual reading of books. And that's what my talk will be focusing on, and that's what I write about regularly.
Yeah, you have a column in the Santa Fe New Mexican's Pasatiempo called Type A, which I've been reading online and which everybody can take a look at. Let's talk about some of those specific things. I mean, the distribution now happens online, and you can get a book within 17 seconds instead of going down to your local bookstore or ordering a book or whatever. What about the actual economics of publishing? When you don't have paper books, when you have e-books, they cost less. Who is taking the hit? Is anybody making money? What's going on?
Well, yeah, there's a big misunderstanding. People often think of publishers as printers, and publishers are not. They're engaged in an intellectual game of selecting works of literature or nonfiction that they believe readers should read. They then help shape that work through editing and working on it, and then they market the work. So the printing for them has always been a minor part of it, although an expensive part of it. So the price drop on the difference between an e-book and a paper book is not as substantial as consumers often think, thinking, gee, we don't have to print this book, so it must be very cheap. But they're also using this opportunity to get, in a sense, more money out of authors. They're focusing more in e-books on the best-selling authors, and the share of the pie is shrinking. And why this has a consequence is, yes, it allows people to get e-books for a lower price than they used to be able to get paper books, but part of that lower price means that there's less money for authors, and less money for authors has some serious literary consequences. Most authors do not make much money. And so when that pie shrinks, it goes to the better-selling authors and so-called mid-list authors, the authors who are today being read by a few people but might be read by many a few years later, are now facing a table where they're going to have a smaller share of the proceeds. This will also affect other parts of publishing, but, for instance, literary agents will earn less money from this, which means that they'll be taking less of a risk in pursuing new writers. And much like the movie industry, which now increasingly concentrates its efforts on blockbusters with familiar actors, the publishing industry will probably pursue that route as well. And this is also, as you know, it's happened in the music world.
Are there any lessons that publishing and authors and the whole industry of writing and reading can learn from the music industry?
Well, I think we can learn some of the consequences. And this is not necessarily a negative story. I mean, I think, for instance, people often ask me as an author if I'm discouraged about people reading less and less. And I say quite the contrary. People are reading more and more, and e-books are part of the reason. But there will be cataclysmic changes. When was the last time you went into a record store and perused record covers? That's what's going to happen to the book business. You're not going to have places where you can serendipitously run across a new title because you spotted a cover across the room. So the whole manner by which books will find readers will change. And unfortunately, the electronic field tends to favor those who already have an established market presence and make it harder for those who are lesser known. There will be no hand selling of an e-book. Hand selling is a popular term in the bookstore industry, where you walk into your neighborhood bookstore and somebody says, oh, this is a terrific book, James. You ought to read it. That's not going to happen in a world where you order books electronically.
Is there any online equivalent of that? In other words, forums and discussion groups and things like that?
There is, and people talk all the time about how social media is a way to spread the word about books. And what happens is we concentrate our coverage in the press on somebody who self-published a book, sold gazillions of copies, and was a great success. But that's much like winning the lottery. With so many people publishing books and self-publishing books, it's virtually impossible to get you're the kind of exposure that you might need in order to be heard or read. And what happens is also the e-book distribution world is very much controlled in the same way that books are controlled. When you go into a bookstore and you see a stack of books at the front, it's not a coincidence that those books are there. Publishers have an intimate relationship with bookstores, just like food marketing companies have intimate relationships with grocery stores. The reason Campbell's Soup are higher on the shelf than the store brand is not an accident. Campbell's Soup has created a financial incentive for the store to display it. Publishers create financial incentives for bookstores to display books more prominently, and they do the same in the electronic world. So it's not an accident that when you go to Amazon, a particular book shows up higher than somebody else's book. And I can give you really specific examples of that kind of marketing difference. So while the field is more open, you can self-publish your own book, it doesn't mean that you'll find readers.
I think it's a really important point that you made a moment ago, that the people who are really taking the hit are not super famous authors, but what are called mid-list authors.
Mm-hmm.
And mid-list authors often become, or I mean, that's nobody starts out as a famous author. You write some books and then one of them may become a bestseller. But there's a lot of people on the mid list who are very, very good.
Yeah, and ebooks in a sense are not the way to go for that kind of world, because the ways that those books become known are not well suited to that kind of social marketing and electronic distribution. The other thing about it is that ebooks has opened up publishing to a great extent. Everybody praises the democracy of it, which is a good thing. We can all go and publish our own book. But the problem is when everybody's publishing their own book, it's like we're all standing on our own soapboxes at the public park talking, and no one is listening to each other because we're all doing our own thing. And I'm not suggesting that the world was such a better place in the 1930s or 40s, but when publishing, American publishing was its heyday, you picked up a book published by Knopf, you knew that what it contained was excellent fiction because they only published that. Now, it certainly meant that many people never got their chance at being heard, but that we shouldn't forget the other aspect of vetting means that there was some recognition of helping consumers know what is good and what is not. Today, with this, you know, increasingly level playing field, it means that an increasing number of really good authors who are publishing really good work will never find their readers.
We're talking to James McGrath Morris about the publishing industry. Now, there's less money for most authors, there's less money for agents, there's less money coming in, about half the amount when you buy an ebook than a hardcover book, let's say. What about the publishers themselves, the major New York publishers? How are they doing? Are they struggling? Are they using this to their advantage to actually make more money off of books?
Actually, the latter. I mean, they are struggling in one respect. Like everybody, they took an enormous hit when the recession hit in 2008. And they are struggling from one thing, which is that the industry has changed so fundamentally, they don't have any predictability. When I first became an author, I and the editor would say, gee, you're writing a book about the Civil War. On average, we sell 45,000 copies, so we may well sell at least that of your book, and we'll be able to present you with an advance on your earnings based on that figure. Today, they have no idea what's happening. So what they do is they tend to put most of their resources behind their proven brands. Their famous authors get more money because ultimately they know they can sell that. They take less and less of a risk. But let's not get too, worried about their financial health, because they've also discovered in e-books they're able to increase their share of earnings at the disfavor of the author. The royalties that they're paying on e-books to authors is far less than they used to pay on paper books. So they have used this opportunity, like any economic enterprise does. Change is often used to the benefit of those who are more powerful. And the more powerful people in publishing has always been the publisher rather than the author, unless you're a James Patterson.
This is all fine and good when you're talking about, okay, this change has recently happened. E-books are a very recent phenomenon, and publishers can say, we're only going to really push and make money off the most famous authors. But 10, 20 years from now, how do new people break in under this model?
Well, I mean, it's hard to know. And, you know, in some ways, I'm making predictions on what's happening now, and things might change dramatically. But basically, publishers at this point are more interested in putting their money behind their proven brands than they are about taking a chance. And they may well have developed a formula, much like we created, you know, concept or boy bands in the 70s, where you come up with a group of unknowns. But what I worry about more, and there are lots of other changes that are going on with e-books, is the illusion that publishing now is an open field because technologically we can make our own books, slap them up on the internet, and everybody can read them. If that's not happening, people who publish their own books this way are earning less than $500 a year and getting very few readers. The democratization of books brought about by electronic books is a good thing in some respects. It means everyone's opinion can get up there. But we shouldn't have any illusion that means everyone has an equal chance at being heard. In fact, quite the contrary. The cacophony of sound is making it harder and harder for people to hear each other.
It's also true that a lot of people who would never have been published under any circumstances anywhere are getting their books up online, and we readers have a big job if we're going to try to read self-published books to sort out which are the good ones.
Yeah, and that's what I meant by my reference earlier to Knopf. It was not a good situation that, you know, minority writers, women writers, often were excluded from being considered for being published by the publisher like Knopf. But at the same time, we forget what they also did, whether they're the ones who brought about Hemingway and Fitzgerald and others and brought them to the forelight. It's a vetting system. Just like when you read a newspaper or you listen to your show, you know there's a lot of care and consideration going into whose voices will be heard. You try to make it as open as possible, but you make a decision. This world of self-publishing in which anyone can be published means there's no gatekeepers whatsoever, and everything is given equal merit, and the resulting sound makes it very hard for the chaff to be separated from the wheat.
James, how does all of this affect you as an established author?
Well, I'm a mid-list author, and what's happened to authors like myself is that we're earning less and less money. And that has a consequence. It means that it's harder to publish a book or get a contract about a book that's, in the views of the publisher, less sellable. My next biography, which is coming out in February, is about an African-American journalist. And, you know, I was offered far less to do that book than I would have been if I'd written a book about Henry Ford. I tend to think the world does not yet need another book about Henry Ford, and a book about somebody who's lesser known is important. But from a publisher's point of view, they're saying, well, gee, it's harder to sell a book about a lesser known person. We need to keep sticking with what we do well, which is selling books about well-known people. So these changing economic conditions are not good for getting the voices of lesser heard people and the stories of lesser heard people into the forefront of books.
There's a real irony there, which is that while there's this illusion of democracy, anybody can publish a book, there's really an erosion of democracy, because if you want to have a democracy, you need books about all kinds of people, not just about the superstars and moguls.
Yeah, you need them, but you also need a forum by which they get in front of people.
Exactly.
In the sense that if Santa Fe had 150 radio stations, and five people listen to your show, and five people listen to the other show, and five people, you know, on and on and on, you'd never have the water cooler conversation that's so important to democracy, where somebody says, did you hear Mary Charlotte this morning? So-and-so said this about the mayor, and we need to change our budget. If we're all listening to our own little worlds, we never get exposed to those opposing points of view. And book publishing is becoming like that, in that, you know, it's increasingly fragmented and fewer people sharing the experience of having the commonality of having read a major work.
This is very interesting and very important, because it's so much like what's going on in the rest of society. There are fewer opportunities to have mid-level careers in many fields. For example, there are fewer tenure-track jobs or tenured jobs, and therefore more adjunct professors who are struggling. And it's the same set of dynamics.
Oh, very much so. And it's classic in a capitalist society where there's been a recession. You tend to live off of your capital, in a sense. It's like public enterprises defer maintenance on the roads because they don't have any money. Well, the consequence is the roads all fall apart eventually, and you have to do something. And we've been, in a way, cannibalizing our institutions, making greater use of associate professors for very little money to teach courses. We've been, you know, in the publishing industry, I always try to explain to friends of mine that I work in an industry where, unlike plumbing, if I don't want to do the job, there's somebody out there who's willing to do it for free. Are there people who would write a book and not earn any money and be very happy? Well, you know, plumbers and other people don't have that kind of competition. And that makes the intellectual fields, the art fields, poetry, music, all of that very hard when these cataclysmic changes occur, both economic and technological. Technology has made a huge difference in hurting the music industry, and it's having the same effect on publishing.
And while it's hard to measure, there is a definitely deleterious effect on society in the long run, because if your entire cultural production is basically best-selling books and a kind of cheesy pop music and sort of greatest hits of classical music, you're in trouble.
Yeah, we're sustained by an illusion that this world of music and literature is open to anyone. Yet we, as a society as a whole, we're only supporting and consuming those who earn the most money. It means that the lesser likely voices, lesser likely to be heard voices, will always remain on the margin. It also means that people of opposing points of view won't necessarily be heard. We're all tending to read stuff that matches our viewpoints, and electronic distribution makes that increasingly plausible. You can design a newspaper to read online, which excludes all the opinions you don't think you should be exposed to. And that's deleterious to everything.
What do you think is a way to address this? I mean, electronic publishing is not going away, although I have to say, personally, my brief experiences with a Kindle were not so good. I did not enjoy reading in that format, but assuming that it's here to stay and more people are using that and there will be fewer and fewer actual books and this trend that you're talking about continues, what are some appropriate responses to that would help mitigate this set of problems?
You know, I'm not sure I know what the prescription is. I've been approaching this much like a reporter. My column is an attempt to cover the changes, like to explain to people that underlining books today is a different act when you underline them electronically and what happens and how people. So I don't quite know what the solution is about it, but one shouldn't measure ebooks by today's electronic standards. When cell phones first came out, our cell phone was in a box, and we had to put a magnetic antenna on the roof, and it never worked properly. Today, we have these cell phones in our pockets that give us access to the libraries larger than the original Alexandria Library. Ebooks will become as readable as paper books. That's unquestionable, and they'll be very easy to read. But how they'll affect the world world is hard to know. Neil Postman has written about this, always makes the point that technology has unforeseen consequences, and it's not clear at the beginning who will win or what or who will lose. And what I'm trying to do is just draw attention to this, that we're already able to see who are the losers and who are the winners. And then maybe out of that we'll come up with some ways to address that. And it may be not in the production of the works itself that we'll do this, but in the sorting out. Goodreads, which was a great website, you know, is now owned by Amazon, which is the leading marketer of e-books. This kind of interlocking electronic web of financial relationships is, again, not the solution to allowing these voices to emerge.
Something you mentioned just a moment ago had to do with underlining and this whole, and you've written a column about this, this whole phenomenon of having a book and marking it up with highlighter or underlining it or writing notes in the margins with ebooks is still possible, but it's become a public act. How does that actually work?
Well, when I had a book and I was a kid and I was reading it and I underlined, what I wrote in those books was a private matter. Unless you turn off some settings, many of the markings you create in an ebook are available to the person who distributed the book to you. So they know what sections of a book are being underlined, and they in turn will share that with you. And what it does is it creates a drive to conformity. You've underlined a little part of the Hunger Games, and it's something that really relates to you, and you turn on a switch and you suddenly realize you're the only one who's underlining that sentence. Everybody else is underlining the other one, and you're at a fragile age. You think, gee, I'm a doofus. I'm not with it. I'm not underlining the right part of the book. That kind of loss of privacy creates a kind of conformity. And why reading is so liberating is it defies conformity. It helps people find somebody else who feels like they are in the world. And often it's a life-changing experience for a young person. So to introduce conformity in that private act of marking and underlining a book is not a healthy thing. And that's the kind of thing I'm trying to pay attention to in my reporting.
And people can hear much more about this tonight when James McGrath Morris speaks at St. John's College at 7 in the evening in the Great Hall. James is author of several books, including the acclaimed biography Pulitzer. I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
As always, it's a pleasure, and authors around the world always thank you for the service you render us.
Thank you, James.